Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast. So today we have two awesome guests. I chatted with two good friends in Italy. We're going to talk a lot about Icardi's official move to PSG. Alex and I will break it at the top. But we'll also have my friend Gabriele Romano. We took kind of a deep dive on Icardi's career at Inter, talked about the highlights and the lowlights. We then are going to answer your Twitter questions. We got some really good on transfers. And we are going to go back to Italy to close the show with my good friend Alessandro from Milanisti Non Evoluto. And we're going to take a deep dive on Milan, which I think you will enjoy. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our good friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, we knew this Icardi deal. We had talked about it last week. I didn't realize how quickly it would be made official, but that happened over the weekend. So we'll get into the figures in a minute. But I want to ask you this question, because I've been really thinking about how quickly Icardi's career has changed. So let me take you back to June of 2018, which really isn't that long ago. I know so much happens every day that June of 2018 feels almost like a century ago, but this was just 2 years ago. And we had Sarri almost winning the Scudetto with Napoli. We have Icardi scoring 29 Serie A goals for Inter. So if back then, what would have shocked you more, to find out that Icardi would be going to PSG 2 years later for half of the price of his exit clause, or Sarri going to Juve after a year at Chelsea, no less? What of these two scenarios would have shocked you more in June of 2018?
It's a good question. I want to say Sarri at Juve, just because he was such an identity of Napoli. So to then learn that really in less than 2 years he'd be at Juve, that would really, really surprise me, because we also know making that direct move wouldn't be that likely. And of course, you mentioned, obviously, he went to Chelsea to eventually get to Juve. But maybe I say Sarri going to Juve also because I think with strikers, their futures are so up in the air. And so I'm probably saying Sarri at Juve because I might not be all that surprised by what's happened to Icardi in the last 2 years or so. Now, that's not to say I would have predicted him going to PSG permanently for half of his clause or anything like that. But nonetheless, you know, Icardi is not necessarily the perfect professional. And I think he gets a little bit unfair of a reputation because his other half probably puts a lot of his reputation on him anyway. But nonetheless, he has his eccentricities, you could say. And strikers, just in general, they're usually different beasts. They usually have different mentalities, and they could be going well, going well, going well. And we've seen a lot just totally fall off the cliff. Now, that's not to say Icardi has or anything like that, but so much can happen with strikers in a short period of time. And I think that monetarily, clauses and everything, I rarely ever expect those clauses to even be fully acted upon. So the fact that it turned out to be a loan to PSG and now it's made permanent, and what used to be his high clause has now clearly fallen, it doesn't surprise me that much. But you're right. I mean, what a star he was in Serie A. And to now think that he's not a part of Serie A anymore, and he's not even really thought of as one of the top strikers in the world anymore, despite being fairly good for PSG this last season, that does surprise me. Just like the overall quick, and fall is a rough word, because like I said, it's not like he's a bad player anymore, but just the public icon fall, he's had that. And it does surprise me, but nonetheless, it's not too surprising to me that someone like Icardi has had a little bit of a rocky ride this last 2 years, and what maybe many would have paid for him a couple years ago is now not what PSG needed to pay for him. So that's a huge reason why I say Sarri at Juve surprised me a bit more. And it's just, like I said, Sarri was just such an identity of Napoli. So to think about Sarri's journey these last few years is just pretty incredible. I mean, listen, I know people have pretty profound and bold opinions on the guy. Some love him and swear he does nothing wrong. Some are wishy-washy. That's kind of me. And then some are really against him. But we could make a pretty good movie of Maurizio Sarri when it's all said and done. And I don't even mean, of course, the last 3 years. David, you know his story better than anyone. You could make a pretty damn good movie of what Maurizio Sarri has gone through in his life. And these last 3 years, 2 years really, have kind of summarized how crazy of a ride it's been for that man. So I'll say it's close. It's a good question. But Sarri at Juve this quickly surprises me a little bit more. So, David, going back to the Icardi side of things, though, what did you make, while we're speaking about the clause and everything and what PSG got him for, what did you make of the financial terms of the deal for Inter?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack, so we'll take a deep dive here. So the terms were 50 million plus 7 million in fairly easily attainable bonuses. I think four out of the 7 million are a layup, the other three a little bit tougher. So let's start there. The original terms were loan with option to buy at 70 million, brought down to 50 million plus, you know, 7 million in bonuses. You could probably attribute some of that drop from 70 to 50 million to COVID, certainly possible. I saw Alessandro Moggi, who is a very prominent agent, said that we can expect kind of this, maybe this 30% drop in fees because of the pandemic. That's possible. I also think, you know, Icardi, you know, did okay at PSG, also didn't light the world on fire either. Let's say he had a great season, maybe they pay the 70 million and the COVID doesn't influence it there. So let's unpack it, because I think it is important as a starting point that in June of 2018, Icardi's exit clause, 110 million. I'm not saying people looked at it as a bargain, but they also saw it as, you know, that's fair market value, worst case scenario for Icardi. Some would argue he was probably worth more. And I would say it's more likely he was worth more than he was worth less. Again, he was young, had a lot of experience in Serie A. So I think you could make the case that Inter didn't manage their asset well. 2 years later, they end up selling him for a lot less. Usually when time passes, we talk about amortizations and plusvalenze. When time passes, you have the advantage that you've amortized more of the transfer fee. So even if you do get less, you still make a good return because you amortize more. In Icardi's case, that really doesn't matter that much because Inter signed them for very cheap from Sampdoria, 13 million total. They had already amortized a few years. So I don't think you can make the case time passed, it's okay. There's no doubt about it that Inter kind of, you could say they managed their asset poorly, or you could say Icardi shot himself in the foot for his value. The truth's probably somewhere in the middle. But where Inter managed this really well is they have already signed Icardi's replacement, and that was last year in Lukaku. And Lukaku has turned out to be a really good player for Inter. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find many, if any, Inter fans who right now would flip Lukaku for Icardi. So they already have him in, so you have the advantage of this big plusvalenza. And Gabriele Romano, who you'll hear in a second, made some really good points about this as well. So you have the advantage that you already have the replacement on the team, so you don't have to use that money to replace Icardi. This does two things. It puts Inter in a position of strength with Lautaro Martinez. They don't need the money, and they can play hardball and say, okay, you want Lautaro, you need to pay his 110 million clause. So it puts them in a position of strength there, and it also helps them in their pursuit of Tonali. They have cash on hand. They've made a big sale. Juve has not made a big sale, and they are the other team in Italy after Tonali. So look, while you can say that, you know, they could have made more money on Icardi not that long ago, you have to at least give credit for Inter for the timing of the whole deal, how they did it, already having the replacement on hand. And look, last season, they had gotten out of financial fair play. They had made, you know, a lot of good moves to get out of financial fair play. So they positioned themselves really, really well here. So I think all things considered, when you look at the big picture, Inter did well with the Icardi sale. But now let's get the perspective from Gabriele Romano. I think you'll really enjoy it. We tried to cover this from a few different angles. Okay, so with Icardi finally leaving Inter on a permanent basis, I was trying to figure of a person to bring on to kind of look back at his career at Inter, talk a little bit about his transfer, and I really couldn't think of anyone better than my good friend Gabriele Romano. You guys know him. He does a great job on Di Marzio's English page. He also collaborates with me on the ESPN Transfer Rumor Raider columns. Gabriele does really amazing work researching all that. And he knows a lot about Icardi and Inter. So I figured this was a perfect time to bring him back. So, Gabriele, it's a real pleasure to welcome you back to Calcioland.
Hi, David. The pleasure is mine. It's always good to be a guest on your pod.
Well, it's great to have you. So let's start here, because let's start with the sale and the return for Inter, because you can really look at this in a lot of different ways. I mean, it wasn't long ago that, you know, Icardi's exit clause, which was over 100 million, was viewed as maybe not a bargain, but definitely worth kind of his value. You know, when we tried to figure out who were the most expensive players in Serie A on the transfer market, his name came up pretty frequently for a while and for good reason. But now the sale, and look, the virus, the pandemic had an impact on this. It ends up being 50 million plus 7 million in bonuses. By the same token, Inter has already replaced them before. So let me ask you, when you look in general of the sale of Icardi and the return Inter got, and when looking at the whole situation, how do you feel about it?
Well, I think it's one of those cases that all the parties involved can be satisfied with the deal, because while it's true that Inter and PSG had agreed a 20 million option to buy in the loan deal last summer, but it's also true that as you said, with the virus impacting the general economy and especially football, I think that the sum that Inter got in the deal is quite a good value, and especially if we consider that Icardi in Inter's books was almost had no value left, so it's almost a total plusvalenza, a total capital gain for them. And if I recall correctly, it's probably the best plusvalenza in Inter history. So Inter got what they want in the deal. So letting Icardi go, because it was clear that he couldn't return to Inter after what happened last year. I think PSG also got what they wanted, so a discounted price on the option to buy. And I think it's a good deal for Icardi too, because he will earn a wage way superior to what he earned at Inter, and he will play for league titles as his wife always said he wanted to. So I think it's a win-win-win situation for all the parties involved.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. So now let's look back. You know, you mentioned Icardi couldn't come back to Inter. If you had to pick a specific moment where there was really a point of no return for Icardi, what would that moment be?
Well, Icardi, in the last few years, I think he was always a divisive figure. So, especially from the fan point of view, he always had some arguments with the fans. But I think that the final straw was that when he refused to play against Eintracht Frankfurt in the Europa League, because it was a moment in time where Inter needed a striker because he was struggling with the injuries. They had to play the Europa League return leg in San Siro with youngsters, with players from the Primavera. So for him, that had been the captain for years at Inter, refusing to be called up, no matter what happened in the dressing room, refusing to play for the shirt that he always said that he loved. I think that was the point of no return for him at Inter.
Yeah, well said. I definitely agree there. Now, more on the bright side, because, you know, let's not forget, I mean, it's amazing how much it changed, but Icardi, you know, was Inter's captain, got to over 100 Serie A goals by the age of 26. Not long ago, was considered one of the best players in Serie A. So if you had to pick a few moments, Icardi's best times at Inter, which ones would you pick?
Well, as I said, he was a massive player also because he had some bright moments. For example, in the recent years, the hat-trick in the derby against Milan, I think it was one of his best games in an Inter shirt. He was epitomized what Icardi could do for Inter. Also, the game against Lazio in 2018, where Inter clinched qualification to the Champions League in the final game, and he played a quiet first half, but in the second half he carried the team to the Champions League qualification. And speaking on Champions League, his first Champions League campaign with Inter was also really good, especially because many people were saying, Icardi is one of the best players in Serie A, but he isn't tested on the European stage. And, when he started to play in the Champions League on a European level, he showed that he could do the business also in a big stage like the Champions League.
Okay, yeah, those were definitely some good ones. So one thing that I think is very interesting in this situation, and I mentioned, is, you know, when you sell a big player, big plusvalenza, usually you have to replace him. Inter doesn't have to worry about that because Lukaku's already there, and he's been excellent. So let's talk a little bit about him. Like, do you think Lautaro Martinez would have developed this season as much as he did had Inter still had Icardi as opposed to Lukaku? And then what else, what other types of qualities would you say Lukaku brings to Inter that Icardi flat out didn't?
Well, we have some fact that Lautaro Martinez played one season with Icardi and one season with Lukaku. So we could compare the goals scored, the minutes played, and, it's easy probably to say that if Icardi was still at Inter, Lautaro Martinez couldn't have had the season that he's had so far with Lukaku. I think that last season, both Spalletti tactics and Icardi characteristics on the pitch hindered Lautaro Martinez's growth in the first team, because Spalletti tried, especially when Inter were behind in the score and had to come back in some games to play the both of them, but he always made clear that Icardi is that type of player that needs a lot of space. So having another striker around him wouldn't have been beneficial for him. While with Lukaku, that's different. I think the main difference with Lukaku. Lukaku is a proven goal scorer because he scored as alive in the Serie A. He scored plenty of goals in the Premier League. So on that level, he's on par with Icardi. But I think that he brings more in terms of link-up play, build-up play, and also fits perfectly Conte's system. So I think it's a perfect match with Lautaro, and the signing of Lukaku was also very beneficial for Lautaro. I don't think that with Icardi, if with Conte and with Icardi in place of Lukaku, I don't think Lautaro would have done so well as he has done so far this season.
Absolutely. And the other thing too, because of that big plus Valenza and Icardi, now Inter can, with Lautaro, really not be forced into selling him unless they really wanted to, and by paying the full clause. So let's close on this. Very simply, how do you think Icardi will be ultimately remembered as an Inter player when some time passes after his sale?
Well, as I said, he's always been a defensive player, especially among Inter fans, because on one side there were fans that believed that his main job was to score goals, and since he excelled at that, he was considered the perfect striker at the time. On the other side, there were people who didn't appreciate him much as a player, because they argued that he lacked depth in his football, and he was just a very good poacher, but not so good team player. So there's that, but I think that another aspect that could become a factor in how Icardi will be remembered is how well will Inter do in the next few seasons, and especially how well Lukaku will do, because Lukaku kind of hit the ground running in Serie A, so there's no Inter fans or people that wish that Icardi were stayed at Inter in place of Lukaku. But I think that there would have been a lot of, we say, bad of widows, Icardi widows, if Lukaku didn't play as well as he did so far. So for sure, one thing is for sure, that he has been one of the most prolific strikers in Inter's recent history, and arguably one of, if not the best players on the post-Tripletta era. But it's difficult to deny that he was also a below-average captain for the team, especially for all the things going on off the pitch, and how impacted this his career at Inter, and also Inter image to some extent.
Well, great perspective, Gabriele. Can't thank you enough. Really, really great job wrapping up this Icardi deal. I look forward to contributing with you to Di Marzio's side. Look forward to more of our ESPN column soon. But thank you so much for coming on. It was a real pleasure to catch up with you.
Thank you for having me, David.
All right, good stuff there from Gabriella. Always good stuff from him. And now let's move on to another segment where there's always good stuff, and that is the Twitter questions segment. David, let's start off with this one. The listener writes, what's your opinion on finishing the season at the cost of hindering next season?
So the schedule came out for Serie A. Ton of games in very few days, a lot of these taking place in the summer, and in Italy it gets really, really hot, and they are playing, you know, at different times of day. They're trying to play most games at 9:30 at night, but there are also, you know, some games at 5 o'clock in July. Look, you know, I hate being the cynical guy, we talked about it last Friday, but as long as there's the guideline that if one player tests positive, the whole team has to quarantine for 14 days. When you look at that schedule, it really ultimately comes down to that if you have one positive test, I don't see how they can finish that, because there are so many games. And if the team's quarantined for 14 days, just think of how many games they miss. So, you know, I hate being the cynical guy. And Enrico Passarella also wrote a really good article on the return of Serie A. And look, you know, the other thing that's really important to note, I firmly understand that it's not just about this season. They need to try to complete this season somehow, get some revenue in because there's a lot of clubs who might not survive this without. So Calcio, as we know it, if they don't get in some games, is in serious jeopardy. Now, it's also very important to note that every country is different. In Germany, things are going really well. But I don't know if the TV contract in Germany works the same way. Would it have been paid if they don't play? I think it's very, very difficult to apply the exact formula that worked in a country to another one. And also the way Italy was ravaged by the virus compared to Germany is very different. There's probably a different appetite and sentiment towards games coming back in Italy than there is in Germany. So to answer the question specifically, if they complete this season, obviously we're going into games in August. There'll be a short break. Then we start the next season. Who knows with transfers? This seems really, really pretty crazy. In an ideal world, if there were no financial concerns, if you said the industry can survive and even all the people that work, that live off the calcio as we know it in Italy can survive, you would say, you know what, it probably makes more sense to just say this season's over, figure out whichever way you want, titles and whatnot, but that we need to save next season. But I think there are just too many financial concerns for Calcio long term that I understand why they have to try to complete this season. But this feels very, very difficult, very chaotic. So I don't know what to make of it, but I still go back to, until they change that rule that if one player tests positive, the whole team quarantines, it's going to be very difficult to get some of these games in.
Well, David, let's move on to the next Twitter question, and it is, how do you think Inter will use the Mauro Icardi money?
Yeah, so and I know the listener also pointed out, you think they'll improve at wing back, which is certainly possible. So look, you know, they could invest the money in Tonali. Keep in mind, also clubs are taking some big losses because of the pandemic. Maybe also Inter can help avoid, you know, getting in trouble with their balance sheet by not spending all the money of the plusvalenza. But on the other hand, really the benefit of a big plusvalenza coming in is really in 1 year. It's no surprise that when Juve sold Pogba, then they turned around and bought Higuain because they had the money to spend there. They could record a big addition to their payroll to kind of with that plusvalenza that would offset it. So time is now. So I would say Tonali, and I kind of agree with the listener, wing back to me is the position where Inter needs to improve. So, you know, maybe they can go with Emerson Palmieri or someone, you know, another starting caliber wing back. So I agree with that, but I also wouldn't underestimate Inter. If the season doesn't come back and teams have to, you know, try to offset some losses, this would certainly help Inter as well.
Okay, well, staying on Inter, do you think Tonali will join them?
I think, you know, right now, if you were to handicap it, Inter are ahead of other clubs. I wouldn't underestimate, you know, the interest from abroad, Barcelona, PSG. In Italy, I would say it's fair to say Inter are ahead of Juve. And this was even before the Icardi sale. So to me, the Icardi sale, if you wanted to handicap it as Inter 57%, Juve 43%, just between those two before the Icardi sale, maybe now you can push it to 60-40. Something like that. You know, I go back to the fact that for Tonali, it's kind of ironic that it would be easier to play regularly at Juve than he would at Inter. I mean, Inter's a really good midfield. Almost all of Inter's, you know, core midfielders could start for Juve. Same can be said for Juve, but it seems Tonali is open to joining Inter, which I've always said is a very underrated factor in all this, because that offsets the concerns that you could say because Inter can't offer him guaranteed playing time. So if I were to handicap it, just Juve and Inter, I would say 60% Inter, 40% Juve. Of course, things can change, but Inter having the Icardi money definitely helps here.
Okay, David, fair enough. Next one. Has Calcio lost a huge entertainment factor in Wanda and Icardi's permanent move to France? Who could take over this crazy mantle?
I like it. Good question. And, you know, we are in jeopardy because Nainggolan isn't going to be around much longer. I mean, Icardi and Nainggolan, it's just crazy to think they're on the same team. They, you know, we're kind of have that mantle. And I was trying to think who could take over after that. And, you know, in Serie A, we always have great presidents. And I think Comiso is becoming a really, really fun an entertaining character in Serie A. I mean, before we had all these breaks, I mean, think back at how he went crazy on the Juve penalties and whatnot. Like, I think Omiso is a great character, but as far as players, it's kind of tough. I got to think more about it. I was trying to think who could take over that mantle, but I feel too, you know, we live in an era where athletes are so much more polished now. You know, we hear about agencies, you know, not just, you know, an agent who negotiates a deal, but a lot of these players now have PR firms. Wanda and Icardi, and I think it was really more Wanda, kind of more an old school people in this PR friendly world. So I definitely think in Serie A, we still have the great characters with the managers, but I feel like players have their image much more polished than they did before.
I did enjoy that question for sure. All right, next one. Can Juventus afford to buy both Pogba and Arthur, or Jorginho and Tonali?
No. Look, Juve, they would definitely have to do some swap deals. You know, I would say Pogba, like any of those three, Pogba, Arthur, Jorginho, and Tonali is possible. I wouldn't say any other combination of the two because the wages are substantially higher. Tonali, at least, yeah, it would be a big transfer fee, but we're not talking huge wages. I'm looking at the annual cost of these players because that's ultimately what matters is how much they would cost Juve a season. Pogba, Arthur, Jorginho, all big salaries, especially Pogba. That's a very significant annual cost. But look, they would have to do some swap deals. They would have to sell. If you told me Pogba and Arthur, which is really saying a lot, then my guess is Pjanic and Alexandro are included in deals to make big plusvalenza. I don't see it happening any other way. Would definitely Pjanic would have to leave, and there would have to be another very big plusvalenza. So even if they could somehow make a big deal for Rabiot, which seems hard, at least he has a low amortized value. But long and short of it, I only see Juve being able to sign Tonali and the big name veteran, but not two veterans. That would really be a lot.
Okay, fair enough. David, how about this? Aside from Pjanic, are there any other Juve players who could be included in a deal for Jorginho?
All right, Alex, we'll get your thoughts on some of these. Now, these are names that I've read online. I haven't necessarily read them from Gianluca and Fabrizio. So aside from Pjanic, the other names that have been linked to Chelsea from Juve are Alexandro, but that's more in a deal for Emerson, because Juve would probably have to get a starting caliber left back, actually, certainly if they move on from Alexandro. So I'm not sure how much that impacts Jorginho. The other names that we've heard, and I doubt they would excite the Chelsea fan base, let me say that up front, are Bernardeschi, Rabiot. I've yet to hear Ramsey, but we've heard him mentioned with Man United, and Pogba, but we're looking at more Bernardeschi and Rabiot. Now, we were talking not long ago about Chelsea, you know, with Boga, with a winger and whatnot. Bernardeschi is a little bit older, so maybe it's not a young player who's really worried about that year of development. Bernardeschi's already making a good salary. But I can't imagine any of these names excite the Chelsea fan base. Right, Alex?
No, everybody just wants cash. They just, if they want to get rid of Jorginho, or if they feel like that's inevitable, they just want cash. I'll be honest, most of the Chelsea fan base doesn't even want Alexandro. I want him, but most of them don't want anybody besides Matthias De Ligt, Demiral, or Paulo Dybala. I haven't even heard Ronaldo's name be a shout, but nonetheless, it's very few players they seem to want from Juve. And
well, you know what? Demiral's an interesting one because, you know, it definitely feels like Juve wants to build around him, but I wonder if he becomes a chip. Again, I know Juve's position, and you hear that from everyone super reliable on Juve, but I do wonder if that's a player, if, say, he also pushes to play a little bit more. I mean, it was interesting when we had Adam Digby on that he said, look, you kind of look at Juve's recent history, he is the type of player that then gets included, and they could make a big plusvalenza on him. So I wouldn't exclude him altogether, although, again, I will say throughout every source says that Juve believes in him, but because that would be somewhat of a fit with Chelsea, right? I mean, Demiral would fit pretty well with your center backs.
Yeah, totally. Especially attitude-wise. I mean, he would be another young center back to group with Christensen and Tomori, where you'd hope at least two of them hit out of the three. But Demiral, the attitude he has as a center back, like he feels like a real center back, and Chelsea lack someone with a center back mentality.
He's like the opposite of Christensen in that sense.
Spot on. And I like Christensen, but he's never going to make me feel like he's an old-fashioned real center back.
He's like the deluxe Rugani, like a good version of Rugani.
You know what? That is. I couldn't agree more with that. That is exactly what he is. And hey, that still means he has talent and everything, but I think many people probably listening, especially Calcio fans, when they think center back, they think a real center back. And I get that from Demiral. I don't really get that from Christensen. So I'd love him, but I obviously feel it's unrealistic, as you said. So interesting. You know, I feel like Chelsea and Juve, they'll be tied together all window long. All right, David, let's move on. How important is the stadium development for Atalanta, and can they cement their status in the top four?
It's an interesting question because, you know, if we looked at it, you know, what's the best thing Atalanta can do to continue growing? It's exactly what they're doing, like modernizing their stadium. They own the stadium now. They are looking to develop it around it. They redid already the Curva. It looks really nice for their own fans, and they're redoing the rest. So look, we've said it along. I mean, Atalanta is just a perfect business model that they're executing really, really well. So it makes perfect sense that on paper, you could say, yeah, this is exactly what you need to do to continue growing. And good for them, reinvesting even a lot of the sales of players in the stadium makes perfect sense. But I go back to the fact that it's really contingent on what happens to Milan, because at the end of the day, you look at the revenues, and even if Atalanta increase a lot their revenues from the stadium, they just are in a brand like Milan. And if we assume Juve and Inter, because of their revenues and their squads now, are going to be really good for a long time. Lazio, look, you know, they are building themselves really well. You have Napoli, who still have a lot more revenues than Atalanta. And then you have to throw in Milan in the mix, because Milan is still a bigger brand than pretty much everyone, the sleeping giant in Serie A. So I think Atalanta with the stadium, they're giving themselves a chance to always take advantage of one of those other teams with bigger revenues falling short of expectations. So in that sense, you have to commend them, because they are doing everything they can control. But they are always going to need one of the other giants to struggle and be a little bit short for them to consistently be in the top four, in my opinion.
All right, David, last Twitter question here, and it comes from Art Morelli. The question is, hey, David, you have a lot of historical expertise. Are we living in the worst timeline?
Well, I don't know if Art's trolling. I wouldn't say I have a great or long historical perspective by any means. But, you know, I like to read a lot. Look, you know, the one thing that stands out to me, though, is I think this is the worst timeline ever if you live in a Western country. I think, you know, if you live in North America, if you live in Western Europe, this past year has been absolutely brutal. You know, but I think for a lot of, you know, we even talked here about nostalgia from Last Dance, nostalgia for the 90s. And I certainly have a lot of it, because that was a time really where it was the peak in a lot of ways of the Western world. And I feel for some other countries, you know, they've developed a lot since then. So I think sometimes we kind of have this cultural, you know, bias where we just look at it through our lens. Now, granted, between the pandemic and what's happening here in the United States right now, we really are in difficult times. I will say, without getting too political, the one thing that scares me the most is how polarized we are. I think never in my lifetime have people been as divided as they are now. Like now, literally, we can all watch exactly the same thing unfold at the same time and have a completely different view of it. I'm not going to get into too much, you know, Trump with the Bible at the church yesterday, but what really scared me was seeing the difference in the reaction to that. And that really, really scares me, because if we can't even have some community, some empathy at a time where we have a pandemic, where we have cities on fire. And for me, regardless of whose fault it is, it's incredibly sad that we are barely talking about the reason why so many are trying to peacefully protest. A lot of the conversation has shifted, and that's really, really sad to me. So, you know, I don't want to get too political and all. The last thing I'll say is that, you know, when we have colon cancer awareness month, we don't say, no, all cancers matter. We shouldn't single out colon cancer. Right now, we need to talk about Black Lives Matter, and we don't need that distinction. So we don't do a distinction for cancer. We don't say, oh, it's Easter. All holidays matter. We shouldn't celebrate Easter. This is a topic we need to talk about now. Very easy for me to do because of my background, but I think it's really important for people to take some time and listen. But as far as the worst timeline ever, what really scares me is this extreme polarization. And I think we all need to kind of try to do our part to try to listen maybe a little bit more than speak. So I hope I wasn't too preachy. So before we get to a deep dive on Milan with our friend Ale, we'll do a brief segment for our patrons. I want to take this moment to thank our patrons. With their support for the past 3 months, we've been able to pay quite a few freelance writers that lost their jobs. We've had some awesome articles on CultureLand's page. I know the writers really appreciated being able to get some articles in, get paid a little bit. We're going to phase out a little bit that program. I'm still going to keep a little bit of the writers, but we are going to start supporting again our charity, the Insuperabili, which run great football academies for children with disabilities in Italy. Those academies are restarting now. So we are going to support them, but I want to thank all the freelance writers who contributed it and our patrons for helping them pay for them. And I'm very happy to be joined by my dear friend, Alessandro Iagobone. You guys know him. When we want to get some inside information on Milan, he is our go-to person. I had the pleasure of being on one of Alessandro's directas in Italy last week. It was great to chat with him and his crew about Milan. So I figured we'd do the return leg on CultureLand. For those of you not familiar with Ale, he is based in Milan. He is the co-founder of the outstanding Radio Rossonera. You can hear him in Italy on Sport Italia, TV dello Sport. He runs a fantastic Milan group called Non Evoluti. As I always say, he is a Milanista doc, old school Milan fan, very plugged in with what's going on with the club. So Ale, it's always a real pleasure to welcome you back to CultureLand. Bentornato.
Ciao, David. Ciao to all your listening, your followers, and all the people that listen to this fantastic podcast. I'm glad and proud to be back to you. And yes, thanks for your coming to my live, because sometimes when I'm in the bad mood, I give a look again, watching again to that live. It's been like fantastic. But don't speak about NBA anymore with me, because please, I felt discriminated, and that's not nice.
Well, I promise we're going to keep it on Milan here today. So I kind of want to talk about a lot of subjects on the Rossoneri, but let's start with at the top. With Ragnić, it almost feels inevitable that he'll come. So tell me a little bit, would you be really surprised if Ragnić isn't at Milan whenever the next season starts? Do you think it's inevitable that he'll be at Milanello?
Well, as you said, like, I would be very surprised because what I know, they're like, there is pending like talk since last November. And if you remember the Boban's words, like when he broke up with the Milan, he spoiled like the situation. So He put like another piece of puzzle on the table that matched with what I had. And still, I'm keeping having like, because like the news, even if the official is Milan, is like answering that is not true, that nothing is made, like nothing is firm, like it's signed, like nothing is like confirmed. But anyway, like this is like a circumstance declaration, like and worse, just because there is Pioli, there is still a season that is going on, there is still Maldini on the management. But anyway, it's like, as we say in Italy, is a Pulcinella secret. So if things doesn't change because of Ranić character, and you know, like I mean, is a kind of I don't know, not crazy, but you know what I mean, like a person that in the past changed mind or changed decision because of without advise anyone, like if Milan changed plans last minute. But this could be like just one I don't know, one bad news, because could be like just to have Pioli and the same mediocrity that we are still living right now. And so it's not like a plan B, could be like the Fed. And I hope that doesn't never happen.
Okay, well said. Now, I know the role Ragnić could have is, you know, we've read different things. So do you see him as someone who is going to come just to oversee the sporting area? So kind of like a British-style manager, or do you see him also coaching the team? So if Ragnić come, is your expectation that he's going to come along with another coach, have another coach, or is he going to coach Milan as well?
Well, for what I understood, like talking with people that knows him like very well, we had also a live with the person that is living in Germany, is working in the soccer world, like, and had the chance to know him better, even because he's a fanatic of his way to build the teams and the project. So talking to him, like he confirmed what I knew about it, and that he wants to be like octopus, especially in the first approach to the new team, and having tentacles like everywhere, and in order like to don't have like any opposite waves inside of the team, inside the team, and having like a clear idea about what he's doing, without any surprise, without need to convince anyone about the quality of his decision. So for the beginning, he usually does all of these roles, and after, once he set up all the basic things, he put people that he trusts on the bench, but this is just a second step. So what I think he's gonna do, like he's gonna over control everything, or I don't know, at least putting someone that he knows very, very, very well, but not someone that he doesn't or he didn't work with him already. So for me, it's the first option. So checking everything, controlling all the sides of the AC Milan's world, and after giving the chance to other people to work under his control, but you know, putting like a new coach or whatever around him.
Yeah, no, that certainly makes sense that it would be that way. So let's talk briefly about Maldini. So obviously, you mentioned Boban left. Maldini, you know, has actually been pretty critical about Ragnić, pretty vocally, publicly. So do you see a scenario where Maldini stays at Milan whenever this current season, if we even want to call it that, takes place? Do you see him staying at Milan long term, or do you see this as just a matter of time until he leaves?
Well, if Maldini was a politician like people, like, for example, the Parlamento Italiano, could be not a surprise the change of mind in 2 seconds just because of the interest that they can take it from the new decision. But after the words, the tough words that we had like months ago about one name and another name, not just about a new project, about a name and surname. His name is Ralph and the surname is Ralphie. So, I mean, it's very hard to consider like the idea that he's doing like an inversion of you know, like yeah, the highway and with a hand heartbreak. And so I don't think he's gonna match this kind of marriage just in case like we have the confirmation that Brian can. So I think that Maldini put a flag on the ground saying, yep, if Ragnik comes, I'm gonna leave. And this is like what is gonna happen more or less. I don't think that is gonna change. Could be like surprising if he's gonna like put under the ground all the words that he spent. I mean, you know, it could be like a huge step back. And let me say, how can you work? How can you work? Considering what I said before, how can Ragnik accept to have someone that considers him like not the right person in the right place in the right moment? So there is no point.
Yeah, no, well said there. So now let's talk about Ibrahimovic, because there was, you know, some uncertainty on Ibrahimovic if he would stay beyond this season. So I want to ask you, how much do you think to the recent injury that he had, which seemed really bad at first and then doesn't seem that bad, do you think that changes things a lot regarding Ibrahimovic staying or going at Milan?
Well, I think that this kind of injury, like, is of course putting everything in standby, because as you know, Ibrahimovic was like deciding, and Milan as well was deciding and thinking about the if renew or not the contract. But the doubts about that could be like changed or delayed, like just in case of one amazing final rush. And this cannot be, because he has to pay at least 1 month, like without yet training and everything, so losing all the feet that he got till now in the this lockdown. So it's old, it's 39. I don't know if he can like take like the right feet to demonstrate in the last matches and to be like I see like one sad ending of a career, and just in case, I would like considering that no one is running after Ibrahimovic at the moment. Honestly, there is no like any request. I would like to see him like the next season with one no contract. I mean, like a kind of zero fee, in order like to wear like the shirt. And to have also the last match, or to be able to help the team inside the restroom, but in the Milanello as well, whatever, but more like a connection between a coach and the team considered like the soccer players, and nothing more. I mean, I would like him like to rest here, like to keep staying with us, but not counting of him like a star or whatever, because there is no point that he can give us back as much we shall need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now let's look at the opposite side of the spectrum. A young player who's done a lot of great things for Milan, and this is Donnarumma. When I was here on your diretta, you actually broke some very interesting news on his extension. So obviously he has 1 year left on his deal. Milan could make a big profit on him. He also loves the club. So tell me, what are the odds that Donnarumma signs a new contract with Milan, and what do you think that extension would look like?
Well, as I said, like during the live that you were part of it, and the news, the good news is that the intention of both of the parts to find a way is not because they love each other. I mean, the only one that loves someone is Donnarumma, and Donnarumma loves AC Milan, loves mm-hmm. the people, loves the fans, loves the city, loves the shirt and everything. Considering like Elliot, Gazidis, / Raiola, they can just meet each other just because of interest. And the situation is that AC Milan has like a short-term contract that is expiring the next season. So has no power to deal in this case.
Yeah.
Is the best carpet for Raiola. But the coronavirus helped us, our dream to keep Donnarumma longer with the Milan t-shirt. Because even if they have a strong portfolio, they have a strong bank account and everything, also Barcelona, Liverpool, Manchester City, whatever, all the Paris Saint-Germain, all the biggest team got hit from coronavirus problem because they lost the incoming revenue from the boxing the matching day and everything, the match day, sorry, and all the things about the sponsorship, all the events, all the circuit that is around the soccer. So they had to take care about the count and the balance as well. So it's not the best moment for Raiola to put one expensive dish on the table because nobody can give him what he would like to take from this important transfer. So the idea is to renew the contract, of course, not 4 years or 5 years, not that long, but a shorter term contract, more than 1 year, 2 years, or whatever, with an agreement of release for one X amount that is been not defined yet, but could be around 50 millions. And the people could say, oh, but come on, Donnarumma is worth value more than 50 million. So yes, of course. But you need to consider the situation right now. Right now, Raiola said to calciomercato.com twice that if they have to sell right now, more than 30 million is impossible to get. So if you analyze the contract and give a release amount that could be affordable and could satisfy at least more than the 30 million the AC Milan needs, and giving the chance to the player to be free to escape, to don't be close in a golden cage could be with a longer contract. This is a good bet for both of the parts. I mean, because Raiola is saying, of course, everyone can say, Elliot or Gazidis could say, we are building a great Milan, we have a great intentions to improve, and blah, blah, blah. But these are words, the Chinese words, the first Elliot approach to a Milan word. So, honestly, as much as the supporters, they trust, but not too much about the future. We cannot blame Raiola and a young player that has a future in front of him if they don't trust 100% and they want to see the results on the table. So this could be the good compromising. Like, you promise, of course, I give you time to realize your promise. If you don't believe like AC Milan, and you put back like in the competition like level that could be like enough to at least to have a project, to have like the light in front of the tunnel, you know? If you do this, okay, we can exchange again, extend again and everything. If you don't, at least we are not like in a golden gauge, locked in the Milan shirt without any future. They can find someone that put 50 million on the table and go ahead. So this is could be the right solution for me.
Yeah, no, it seems like a very good solution, which avoids the worst case scenario for all the parties involved. So definitely makes sense. So I want to ask you about a couple more players. And this isn't so much, you know, if you think they'll do it at Milan, if they'll both stay. But I'm just curious in general, who do you think is going to have a better career overall? And hopefully both do great at Milan. But between Leao and Paqueta, and the reason I want to ask you, these are two young players that Milan invested a lot in. So if you had to guess, 5-6 years from now, who's going to be a better player between these two?
Well, I mean, I'm not in love with none of them. Not because of the quality, because they have. And just because I know that they have qualities and sometimes they have not the good approach. With this kind of players, I'm very tough because I ask them more. I ask them like... I mean, I don't like when you have quality. God gave you like the quality to play with the ball with the way that they do and they know how to do, and you waste it because your head is going is not strong enough. And so at the moment, it's hard to say because if I have to break a lance from that side, like they played in this AC Milan. And I mean, it's not like that easy to get into the team that is not like based on the, some like strong, like, you know, stones. And you're young, you arrive to San Siro. San Siro is like whistling you, like if you don't do like the right choices in the first 2-3 matches. So there are like so many like variabilities that could change the kind of career of that players. It's up to them, but I think that Paqueta has a short future here in Milan. Leao is has a longer like or at least more chance to demonstrate, because of course we cannot change all the players in the next March season, but I think Leao could be like, if I have to bet like €1, I put on Leao. And because Paqueta had like an approach that I didn't like, and I had more chance of Leao to demonstrate the quality in San Siro, and he had bad approach lately when he was like not titular of the, you know, in the main list of players and squad list. And when he can jump into the field, he didn't do with the right approach. And this left a bad taste on my mouth. And I don't know. If I have to bet €1, I bet on Leao.
Okay, interesting. So let's close on this, Ale. I always mention that I love about you is that you're really plugged in about Milan, as you showed us once again, but you also have a very strong passion and love for the Rossoneri. So I want to ask you, you know, what are you optimistic about Milan? Before we started recording, we chatted Rockefeller, which is Jay-Z, Rock Nation, which is Jay-Z's sport agency, is definitely looking to invest more in calcio. They have a few clients already in Serie A. So you were telling me that they are looking to expand more in Italy. So talk to us a little bit about that, but then also tell us in general, what makes you optimistic about Milan?
Well, I like I like the way that finally that are approaching to those sides of a similar world. Like, I mean, I see that with the Ragnik International project, with the new players that they are like basically new prospects, but with quality and everything needs like this is like showing finally the decision to program the season, not just this season but the next seasons, with a stadium like project that is going on, and with the international approach that also the marketing of AC Milan is having even with the coronavirus charity event, with the love event that internationally is being played like everywhere, and it's been the first real approach of the marketing of AC Milan to international view. And as you know, we got spoiled like some AC Milan t-shirts on NBA or whatever, like players. And this is, you know, the Americans, you live in America, you know.
Yeah.
America, when they do something, there is always a reason. They don't publish anything randomly, you know. Everything is like studied, code, and everything. So that is being like the first sign, the first spoil of what is going on, what like Americans, like brand and management are looking at. And AC Milan is one of the most like international skill like team in Italy, probably the most famous around the world. And even if he's out of the international competition since 6 years, but we are AC Milan still. We don't need to keep repeating that, you know, because it's not what I like. But the people from around the world knows that, and keep looking at AC Milan as a prestigious brand and team to like to match with. And so that the intention of Jesse company to enlarge and to take under the control, the marketing control of many top players that are playing in our championship is like a good news, because if he's approaching to AC Milan, as rumors say, could be very, very interesting, even to enlarge like the knowledge of AC Milan to countries that they don't know, or they don't really live like the AC Milan world like so close.
Absolutely. That's a real pleasure.
That's a good sign. I mean, I want to be optimistic because I don't want to be optimistic because of the names of players. I want to be optimistic looking forward, you know. And it's time to refresh the AC Milan logo to all other ones, like, you know, to polish. How do you say? Like when you have like a very old car, like a Cadillac car that is in the box, like is in the box since so far, and you need to take it out and to say, okay, it's like shining again. And we need to do internationally, because now the world like works in this frequency. We cannot be close in our country and with our fans and with our old mentality that is not matching anymore with the needs that the soccer team needs now.
Awesome. Well, Ale, one thing we always need is to have your knowledge, your personality, everything you bring to the table on the Calcio Land podcast. Everyone check out Ale's great work with the Milanisti Non Evoluti, the Dirette, his contributions to Radio Rossonera. It was a real pleasure to have you on. Grazie mille, Ale.
No, thanks to you, my brother. It's a pleasure always like to be part of your podcast. And a big hug to all the listeners, and of course, Rossoneri fans.